We can forgive those who trespass against us without giving them our power. What this means is that we can have a divine intent for everyone we meet, whether or not they deserve it, have asked for it, or will reciprocate it. There can be an emanating love that comes from us regardless of another's intent or behavior. We can release a magnificent spiritual power through our eyes and gestures toward everyone, while expecting no return whatsoever. We can unleash our love into the world for no other reason than because it is our nature to do so. Love, like any virtue, must be a conscious affair, willed forth, chosen from among all the angelic and wretched impulses available at any moment in the human condition. And so, to ascend to greatness and become generous with love, we must be aware of our own weakness and propensity for evil. By never forgetting that we can teeter into darkness, we can remember to look for the light. By remembering the dangers of cruelty, we must will ourselves to be compassionate and loving. We are not angels. We are humans. But let us nonetheless try to rise to a higher plane. To sense and amplify love, we do not need to love ourselves, though let that be our goal as well. This popular fantasy that we must first love ourselves before loving others serves no one, for it merely gives us permission to await a good day to love others. Should love be kept from anyone simply because we have insecurities? To give love, we must only allow it to flow through us, not attempt to own it or sense some false completeness or personal perfection before exuding it. Love is perfect. We do not need to be. It is selfish and silly to believe we must love every aspect of who we are to appreciate and adore any aspect of someone else. Surely it should be our aim to accept and love ourselves, but we can equally disdain any of our peculiar attitudes or behaviors that steal from our freedom, happiness, and connection with others. If we don't like something about ourselves, we can change it, but we needn't await its repair before we fix that great light of love onto others. We shall not wait for the splendid, mythical, bright day when we are perfect and always bursting with happiness before allowing our own ray of divinity to shine through to others. A divine intent. To open oneself to and release love is the highest act of courage and the highest freedom. Few among us will have such divine intent or be so brave on a consistent basis, but ours must be a different destiny from that of the bitter, weak, or inattentive. If we wish to be a person of greatness, it will require a stunning release of love into the world. Let us choose to live a life defined by love. Let us meet the eyes of all and send this message through our thoughts and deeds. I wish nothing but joy and love for you. But let us also remember that love on the human realm is more than an intention to send others. If there is no actual demonstration of active caring and regard for or from another, then we cannot give or sense human love. Divine love, surely, as it is all around, but love for or from another must be sensed through action, not intent. Thinking is not love. Giving is. Today, like all days of our lives, we have choices to make about what kinds of persons we'll be and how we'll interact with the world. We can meet others with no intention or care, or we can meet them with disregard and bitterness. Or we can meet them with a profoundly loving intent and fire, a full and vibrant energy that reminds them once more of the spectacular abundance of love and divinity in this world. Which choice we make will determine the quality of our lives, the depth of our relationships, and the hope of our human family. Declaration 8. We shall inspire greatness. I don't know what your destiny will be, but one thing I know, the only ones among you who will be really happy are those who will have sought and found how to serve. Albert Schweitzer. When a people begin to perish for apathy, indifference, or a lack of vision, a voice of leadership must arise. From the squalor of a contaminated moral environment must surface an honorable few, unafraid to challenge mediocrity and change the direction of the world. Let us be among those brave few. As so many choose lives of indolence, let us be unafraid of the demands of greatness and choose to pick up the dimming golden torch of human excellence and ignite it once more with life and power for all to see. Each of us serves as a living example to others. Our character and conduct can cast either the bright glow of greatness and service to the far corners of our influence, or a shadow of smallness and selfishness to the unfortunate few nearest us. Our striving for a better life and a better world can leave others inspired if it comes from a genuine place of service, or diminished if it comes from a place of greed. We must have the courage to ask, in this confused era, am I seeking to be a role model on a daily basis for all those I love and serve? Am I lifting up those around me? Am I, in some way, elevating humanity by leading others to see and activate their potential? Am I living a truly great life? Seeking greatness and doing the work to deserve it must come back into our collective consciousness. Let us now awaken that powerful force within that seeks to lift some of the weight of the world from the backs of those struggling. Let us take our position as generals of generosity, as leaders of the highest caliber who give a damn about others and the world. Let us declare with firm intent to the world and ourselves, we shall inspire greatness. A troubled world. The world's people are in peril. We no doubt live in a noisy, numb, narcissistic age. The talents and attentions of the majority are not invested in personal mastery and social responsibility, but squandered on games, voyeurism, and base sensationalism. We have recklessly abandoned what truly matters, the striving to be great as individuals and as a society, for the glamour and thrill of speed, convenience, and vain expression, in a kind of humanity-wide midlife crisis. Gone are the big visions. Here are the quick wins and the sure things. Effort has lost out to entitlement. In the transition to our age of self-adoration and conceit, the page turned long ago on the dreams to rise as a people. Greatness is so rarely sought, and generation after generation fail to hold the line of human goodness and advancement. Why? Because most people don't want to hold themselves or others to a higher standard, because the former requires discipline and the latter invites conflict. And so they excuse their poor behavior and don't call out social wrongs. They no longer firmly expect themselves or others to act with virtue, compassion, excellence, or wisdom. They look away when their bosses do something wrong. They don't tell their children to improve their behavior because they don't want to be too controlling. They can't tell the team to shape up because they don't want to appear bossy. Without more people deciding to serve as role models and leaders, our society has become a suffering case of the silent and bland leading the silent and bland. There is a confused complacency. Everyone knows there is more for us, but it's just too much trouble to organize ourselves to chase it. It is easier to indulge in our comforts, our profits, our easygoing ways. Such habits have reduced our individual greatness and led to a worldwide failure in leadership. This is evident when we see an apathetic populace, unjustifiable poverty, unconscionable greed, and a world ravaged and booby-trapped by war. If we continue on this path, history will not be kind to us, and a cheated destiny will exact its revenge. Is there not a person among us who does not think that we can do better if we tried? The naysayers will tell us nothing can be done. They say that the world is going to hell. It is unrecoverable. They imagine that humankind is simply too sad and selfish to be able to right its wrongs. But is this true? Perhaps some people are indeed so buried in their life's challenges that they can hardly inspire themselves, let alone inspire others. But it is also true that there are some people who are doing their damnedest to improve the world. These people wake each day and fight hard to have a better tomorrow, actively seek learning and challenge in order to grow and contribute, and deeply care about their integrity and the character of their children and communities. If the majority of the world's populace didn't work hard, care for one another, or carry the bright flame of goodness within their souls, then this earth would have perished long ago. Having mastered the atom and the machinery of death, that is, modern warfare, the mere fact that we are alive now reveals a vast preference toward life and virtue. And now we are at a fascinating place where billions of us so desperately want the world to improve, and we want something to give to believe in, to fight for. We are looking forward to contributing our creativity and sweat and fire to something that matters, to something that improves our lives and the lives of others. We are now tired of waiting. So let us lead. Righting our ship. We must begin at home. Let us sit down tonight with our families and take an unflinching look at whom we have become. Are we being solid lovers and parents, good and true children, faithful supporters of those we care for? Is our own house in order? What could we be doing better in the world as a family? Good people often fail to become great people because they avoid looking honestly at their personal lives. They try to lead others but do not lead themselves, and at some point that incongruence catches up with and derails them. So let us ask, what must I finally face and fix in my own life? Do I need to eat healthier? Then let me do it. Do I need to treat my kids with greater patience and kindness? Then let me begin. Are there tasks I have been putting off that could help my family? Then let me complete them. In addressing our own lives, we ready our minds and spirit to address the world. As we seek more influence and attempt to change the world, we will draw more attention to our lives. This should inspire us to care about being a role model and motivate us to right our lives. If we are to be solid for our collaborators, let us be solid for our families. If we want people to have energy for their tasks and duties, then let us take care of ourselves so that we are their inspiration. There is no great philosopher or leader who has not taken care to remind us that we must be the change we seek in the world. Standing apart. Once we get our homes in order, we must seek to reconnect with the world. Our aim must be to help others find their own meaningful projects and causes. This is a vital distinction in an age when so many leaders are shoving their own agendas down the throats of their people. They have forgotten that service is not a selfish act. Should we succeed at becoming great, we will need to be very different than the egoists and extremists who have stolen the mantle of leadership and infiltrated the world's psyche. Look at how sad so many of our so-called leaders have become. They fear becoming unpopular, so they do not make tough or expedient choices, preferring instead endless talk, constant compromise, and obedience to party lines versus public needs. While they are fearful, we shall stand out by being brave. They are dismissive of those who do not have equal or higher power than themselves, rarely speaking with common people and those on the front lines. While they are elitists, we shall be humble and in the field with those we lead. They avoid passionate debate and any demonstrations of emotion, hoping to appear always buttoned up, logical. Their humanity becomes that of a computer, dispassionate and disconnected from the heart. While they have abandoned feeling, we shall live with fire and draw in the world so desperate for authentic emotion and connection. They appeared tired, much older than their age, unable to maintain buoyancy in their voice and carriage, long faces and distant gazes betraying exhaustion. While they lack vibrancy, we shall exude it. Their public discourse and policies cater to the loudest complaining, derelicts, and extremists around them, perpetuating language and beliefs that are of the lowest common denominator, while separating us into camps of stupid stereotypes. While they bow to the extremists and communicate with low intelligence, we will bring a third perspective that is collaborative and conscious. They tend to be reactionary fools, bending and breaking at the whims of a shallow media. And so they stand for nothing and seek to be compliant with the lowbrow nature of mass communication. While they lack dignity and integrity, we shall maintain ours. They shirk responsibility, always pointing and blaming like spoiled children. While they have remained unaccountable and refused to own their actions and results, we shall always own ours. They are greedy for the spotlight and the money, and so they stump for more dollars and power. While they are greedy, we shall be simple and fight for those who suffer from lack. They favor the experts and the comforts of the status quo, forgetting to listen to the youthful and inexperienced who might view the world and its problems from a fresh vantage point. While they dismiss the uninitiated, we shall make them our friends and advisors. They are cynical, believing that change can come only slowly or through formality and tradition. While they have not experienced the power of a movement, we shall begin a movement of our own. We must demand these things of ourselves. Let us be so bold as to lead in new ways, standing apart from those who have been failing to raise our businesses, communities, and nations to higher levels of excellence and greatness. No matter the position we hold at work, at school, or in our community, we shall show the world an alternative example by always caring enough to be remarkable and unifying. In a world struggling for hope and wanting for light and leadership, we shall seek to shine as beacons. Few argue that the world is in need of new and different leaders. So let us sit down tonight and write our manifestos for how we will be different. Let us write and write some more. What beliefs and causes will we support? How will we approach the issues and problems of the world in new ways? What will inspire a new movement? How can we rise? Demand higher standards. If we will make our difference, it will not be alone. And so we must learn soon not to fear demanding that others rise to higher standards should they wish to march with us. If we are to inspire real change and progress, then we must expect more from those around us than others do. This is not new territory. There is a well-blazed trail to greatness from a long line of hardworking and honorable men and women who gave us the freedoms we enjoy today. What were their secrets to success in achieving great things and inspiring others to contribute? They were unfailing in their demands for action and excellence. Similarly, much of the impact of our legacy in this world hinges on our willingness to demand more from people. Demand does not mean to be pushy or commanding, though a leader should not shrink from this. Demand means setting expectations, communicating with candor, constantly holding people to high standards by incentivizing those who rise to the challenge while simultaneously calling out and coaching those who do not. Because many people do not like the concept of reprimanding others in today's overly tolerant environment where people want to be friends, not leaders, we must revisit the concept. A society that lacks good people willing to speak against evil or low standards can only devolve into darkness and mediocrity. When people do something wrong, they need to be told they are doing something wrong. If not, standards slump. The teenager who is hurting others needs to be told to stop, without apology, lest we desire an entire generation of selfish and cruel adults. The politician who is lying needs to be called out, lest we desire a nation led by liars. The coworker who cuts corners needs a talking to, lest we desire a workplace full of cheaters and schemers. This is what a virtuous world requires: candid people willing to hold high standards for themselves and others. We must learn to shape and confront others' beliefs and behaviors so that everyone is moving forward to a meaningful goal. This often means telling people that they are not measuring up or that they could be contributing in better ways. While terrifying for many and unpopular in a world that tells its people not to rock any boats or expect anything significant from others, what is the alternative? To keep quiet as the world becomes increasingly apathetic and dishonest and debased? Some people will tell us not to expect much from others. They will tell us it is unfair to desire more from people. Those who doubt the power and potential of people say, go easy on others. They are weak and weary, so set small goals for them, or they will feel overwhelmed and too often disappointed. These are the catcalls of mediocrity. We must not listen to doubters or allow our small imaginations to cast others as less vital and powerful than their potential, no matter their current state. Who are we to question someone's ability to grow or be great, or to diminish the latent powers of God's children? Let us note the challenges people face, but let us always hold them in high regard and respect. From this place alone, we will gain their favor and willingness to rise. The 9 virtues of greatness. What exactly shall we demand of others? The same we demand of ourselves. Conduct becoming of a noble character. Attention to both our shortcomings and our strengths. A ready willingness to be excellent in our service to the world, even when it becomes tiresome and difficult. We will do this by inspiring and challenging others to act with wisdom and virtue in any part of their lives upon which we have influence. If we have their ear, let us sow the seeds of greatness by inspiring the 9 virtues of greatness. 1. Let us demand honesty. All people want to live proud, upright lives of integrity. They want to be truthful. They hate having to lie, being exposed as liars, and getting caught in the web of others' falsehoods. Yet how easily do these same people make small, false claims and get away with it by an indifferent society? Let us be the ones to hold the line of honesty and call out wherever it is breached. Let us be the ones to push people to be straightforward in their lives. If someone lies, let us speak to them immediately, saying, I'm concerned about your level of honesty. This is called candor, and it demonstrates a willingness to hold people to high standards. We must be uncompromising regarding truth, and we must inspire others to be the same. 2. Let us demand responsibility. Many people have an innate sense of responsibility for their actions, but too many avoid it in the name of ease. They know they should finish the report they promised, but they would rather go to the game. They know it is wrong not to pay their child support, but they prefer to keep the money for their own rent. They know they should be responsible for their actions, but it's easier to duck their duty and blame their parents or culture for their bad behavior. But when someone favors ease over duty, many suffer. Our job as leaders is to activate and encourage a more responsible nature in those we encounter. When those we influence fail to do their duty or to own their reality, we must help them see the full canvas of negative consequences they are creating for themselves and others. We shall say, "Do you realize that when you failed to complete your responsibility and turn in that report, your entire team was put on hold and left uninformed at the last meeting? Are you aware of the fact that by you not paying child support, your son is taken to stealing food from the corner grocer? Can you see that all this blaming of your parents and culture isn't getting you anywhere, and that you alone are responsible for your actions and direction in life regardless of the past? It is difficult to point out the mistakes or failings of others, but we must do this if we seek to lead. We can be kind and understanding, but let us be direct and passionate in helping them improve for the future. If we are unwilling to point out when someone is being irresponsible in their duties and behavior, then we are unfit to lead. 3. Let us demand intelligence. The world has grown full of people ignorant of the grave matters affecting their lives and communities, and only superficially informed in their areas of expertise. Yet, as people become more ignorant, they become more cynical. They have not taken the trouble to learn what is true, so they reject the facts that they were too lazy or biased to examine. We must not continue celebrating ignorance in our society. Our modern culture adores the moron on television, the brainless face in the magazine, the thoughtless extremist on the airwaves. We mustn't be blind to the fact that our children are seeing this and becoming blind themselves. If we are to be great, we must take responsibility to help others learn, explore, think critically, and grow in wisdom. For all those we influence and lead, we must be role models and expect more thoughtfulness and intelligence. Let us not fail to ask our children to study more, our coworkers to do more research, our media to present more balanced and informed news. If someone asks us an ignorant question, we must encourage them to spend more time preparing. If a coworker acts ignorantly, we must advise them to become more knowledgeable and assign them a mentor. And should we witness true wisdom, genius, or creativity in any area in which we serve, let us be its ultimate champion and incentivize brilliance. 4. Let us demand excellence. For those destined for greatness, all things must be done well and to completion. We must strive for the highest levels of work and achievement in all we do. And no one within our sphere should be allowed to approach their work with half interest or occasional effort. Should we find such a person in our midst, let us be candid with them about our higher expectation and do all that we are able to help them meet it. But should they fail to meet it swiftly, we should send them as swiftly away. We have no time for mediocrity on our march. Those who do not share our interest in excellence must be left behind, as they will not contribute meaningfully, and they cannot be led on our particular path. We have no need to worry about cutting poor performers loose. They will quickly be picked up and find their own place. This is not being dismissive or cruel or unappreciative. It is simply allowing people to find out where their level of contribution and talent is really needed. We do not judge them, and we do not need to seek to fix them. On our own journey, we are merely choosing to surround ourselves with those who align with our values and our mission. We must never be shy in setting the expectation for world-class performance. Widely shared, it becomes an unwavering standard that inspires everyone to a higher quality of action. 5. Let us demand courage. The world's fate lies with the number of its people dedicated to courageous action. In all areas of influence, we must defeat our own fears and instill the same strength into those we care for and serve. We must motivate people not to talk, but to act, never allowing others to let words substitute for actual effort. We can help others favor action by asking, "What have you done about it?" as much as we ask, "What do you think about it?" When we see others shrink in silence or back off from their dreams, we should ask, "Why?" If their response grows thick with excuse and weakness, we should take it upon ourselves to remind them of their innate powers of will and strength. Courage is often cultivated through confrontation, forcing others to face fears and injustices, teaching people to help rather than hide, asking for candor over quietness, urging others to stand up rather than back down. 6. Let us demand respect for others. The glow of respect nurtures all other virtues of human connection: kindness, compassion, fairness, empathy, love. We must show tremendous respect to those we seek to inspire, even if we are being strong and demanding with them. And we must ask them to give others the same respect. The more people we lead, the more we can anticipate that there will be disrespect in our ranks, whether toward us or toward others. We shall be kind to the perpetrator, yet uncompromising in asking for apology and redress. Give the disrespectful person affection and patience, but also clear warning. Do not tolerate any behavior that is dismissive, cruel, or condescending. Should we fail in this, then we ourselves become unworthy of respect. 7. Let us demand vigilance. Among the great, there is a healthy paranoia, a heightened concern of the dark shadows of apathy that could, at any moment, overtake a shining cause. All that makes consistent success possible: drive, discipline, persistence, commitment, come from a vigilant awareness of what we are fighting for, of what might make us fail, of our ethics, of how successfully we are progressing. We ask for vigilance by focusing everyone's attention on the things that matter and by being honest about progress toward those things. We must constantly say, pay attention, know what we are doing, know where we must do better, and know what stands in our way. Great leaders are on edge in a conscious way. They are alert, yet calm. 8. Let us demand service. Too many have forgotten the charge that our ancestors left us to direct our energy, knowledge, and talent toward making a difference. What are we all fighting for if not to improve one another's lives? For our families, communities, and world, we must rise in service once more. Service is the intent to do good and do well for others, to be of genuine, warm assistance in their time of need. Do the people around us care deeply for others? Do they want to help people? Do they worry about getting it right and wowing those we strive with and serve? Those without this virtue in their hearts must not be within our circle. Remove them at once, as the selfish and unconcerned will rip us from glory. 9. Let us demand unity. The pillars of a community cannot be strong when corroded with gossip and pettiness. We must inspire in others their natural tendencies for tolerance, bonding, and community. We must always remind others, we are in this together. This is the most basic expectation of all leadership once the proper people are involved, that we are on a march together toward something important, that we must work together, stay together, struggle together, and achieve together. We must never be the weak, small leaders who start fights within our ranks. Our communication must always carry the theme of togetherness. Do not gossip. Do not divide the team. Do not make one division seem more important than the others. Should we witness others becoming selfish or demonstrating narrow interests, we shall remind them of their greater connection and service to others. We can praise an individual, yet still draw her attention to her positive impact on the team and culture. The moment we succeed is when our people say us or we more than I or me. When we see our people celebrating wins together, dining together, crying together, striving together. Honesty, responsibility, intelligence, excellence, courage, respect, vigilance, service, unity. These are the virtues of greatness that we must exemplify and expect. These are the virtues that forge remarkable people and may be wielded like a sword against many of the world's ills. The demands of such virtues are stark and difficult. Some people will question how we can simply leave behind those who fail to meet such high standards. But let's stop the grand illusion that says everyone has to be on every journey we take. The reality is some people won't want to join our march, and they should be allowed to excuse themselves without shame or regret. Not everyone needs to be part of every initiative, and not everyone can live up to the standards of excellence we need in order to achieve the remarkable. And so let's find those who are truly committed and capable and leave the rest to find their own passions and pursuits. The death of darkness. If we inspire ourselves and those we strive with and serve to such greatness, what will be its end? Nothing less than the death of mediocrity in our circle of influence. Perhaps it is true that there will always be low standards in an immense society, and perhaps because worldwide change takes so long, only the dead see the end of war and poverty and all other dark social failings. But we, the living, must nonetheless try. Let us at least strive toward ending many of society's ills, for if we do not, then who will? And when? What will history say if we do not do better? Can there be a new dawn of humankind in which more of us become great men and women of character and conscience? If we doubt it, we are doomed to fail. But if we lift this mantle from previous generations, carry it further, and share both its burden and its splendor more widely, then we shall become examples of greatness that the children of the future shall celebrate and aspire to. Let us then, out of respect for the blood and hard-won triumphs of those who have inspired us, and in duty to those who we love and serve, and those we shall never know who await inspiration, arise now and become great. Declaration 9. We shall slow time. The aim of life is to live, and to live means to be aware, joyously, drunkenly, serenely, divinely aware. Henry Miller. Life is meant to be a vibrant, deeply felt, growing mosaic of meaningful moments. It is to be a grand, fully engaged, and unconditionally committed love affair with our daily experience. We are supposed to feel this and sense this, to engage with whatever appears in front of us with awareness and enthusiasm, joyfully unwrapping the gifts that fate has chosen to bring. We are not supposed to miss this moment. We were not destined to go barreling through life half numb, unaware of our senses and surroundings, deaf and blind to the magical qualities of the moment. This day is to be enjoyed like a pause at a cool stream during summer's heat. Even in darker times, we should look around us with awe, taking in the beautiful scenes and small wonders that surely abound, fascinated even with any hint of hope in the darkness, like staring into a moonlit field alive with a million silent fireflies. We are not supposed to miss this moment. Our brain was not built for this frenzy, forced to focus on everything, yet nothing, sped up and buzzed out by syrups and stimulants, crammed with so much random negative information and so many pointless tasks that there is never a singular focal point to immerse in or achieve or celebrate. We are not supposed to miss this moment. Our bodies were not designed for the atrophy of a sedentary life, choked full of laziness and sloth and hours sitting behind desks, robbed of the pleasures of touch and movement and the blessed physical exhaustion from a good day's work, actually doing something or building something. We are not supposed to miss this moment. Our soul was not meant to be trapped in the past, weighted by futile attachments to long-standing stories, caged by old angers and regrets, unable to sense and soar in the white and clean emotional expanse of now. We are not supposed to miss this moment. Our families do not desire a life of frenzied urgency. They do not want our absence in mind or body to be their only memory of us. We are not supposed to miss this life. But we do, all frazzled, stressed, and stripped away from the moment. The cost is immense. So many moments blurred by speed and worry and panic, creating the catastrophe of a joyless life. We can experience so much more of life. It takes very little focus and effort to increase our awareness of the gift of each day, to insert more depth and feeling and meaning in life again. Let us make that our aim. We must shift our focus away from the chaos and back to the true order of the universe, which gives us unrestricted freedom and peace in this moment. We must breathe once more. We must drink in our surroundings and let our bodies feel again. We must connect our heart to our life, putting hope and passion and love back into the efforts of the hour. This requires only a new deployment of our attention, time, and energy, a different intention and pace to life. We must slow it all down so that we can feel it once more, enjoy it once more, live it perhaps for the first time. This is the moment to finally begin to enjoy life's blessings. Let us declare, we shall slow time. Time is finite. This is the predictable cry of the bewildered and regretful. I thought there would be more time. We say it when our children leave home as if we had planned one day, someday in the future when we were less stressed, to appreciate and admire them before they took wing. I thought there would be more time to enjoy them and watch them grow. We say it when our job is yanked from us, as if acknowledging that we had more to give, as if it were unfair that we didn't get to give it, as if we were waiting one day to show up and perform and contribute for real. I thought there would be more time to demonstrate excellence and make my mark. We say it when our lover leaves, catching us off guard, as if we were blindsided, given no indication, as if it were not our fault that the magic had left long before, as if someday we were going to be a better partner. I thought there would be more time to express how much I love you. We say it as we die, as our last failing grip on reality is being released by a bigger hand, the air slipping from our lungs, the pain fading from intense to an odd dullness, and finally to peace and light. Should we have lived an unfelt and regretful life, we would say this to ourselves as if we were always planning to live someday soon, as if caught by surprise that there is, at last, no more time to live and love and matter, as if we hadn't realized the clock was ticking all along, as if we hadn't known we would be called. I thought there would be more time. Did we not know all this? How do we so foolhardily miss the irony of it all? That here, in an infinite universe, time is finite for us. That even if we cannot discern the order and reason for it all, the outcome is predictable. Life will, randomly, and too soon, be taken away. Perhaps brutishly or easily, but likely with little fanfare or crescendo other than, hopefully, the love that has gathered around us. Why, when that moment arrives, do so many gasp and beg and plead for one more hand of cards, as though the dealer would keep patience for a drifter who never even fully played the cards he had already so generously dealt? We could bemoan the coming decline. We could seek to avert the day death arrives and whispers in our ear that now is our destined moment to ascend back to love. We could deny that it will happen. We could keep missing all the hints we receive to enjoy life while we can, as people we love die, accidents happen, randomness strikes like lightning from a clear sky. But instead, we don't think about our mortality either way. We continue checking our fancy watches and full agendas in a panic, wondering where we are to be, somehow blind and deaf to destiny, waving its arms, crying out in this very moment of reality, saying, my friend, you are where you are supposed to be already. Do you not see? Stop looking for something else and look and feel all around. Everything is here, now. Miss it, and you will have missed life. Nothing but newness. Too many have fled this moment for yesterday or tomorrow, dreaming of a time and place they would rather be. To what result? Those who are alive but who are in a sense living in a different time from now are ghosts. They are never fully seen or sensed by their loved ones. The bounty of the universe cannot find them to gift them. They are dissipated, absent from the roll call of now. Let us not continue making this mistake of being so absent from our day, from this moment. We do not need to feel ashamed that we have been absent, and we must not be bitter to those who have been absent from us. We have missed moments, but that cannot be undone. Our lack of presence yesterday with those we love and lead is done. Those moments shall not return, no matter how we hope to rope them in with heartache. What we missed, we missed. Do not now add the weight of sadness. We can add nothing to yesterday, and we should attach nothing to what we did or did not do, for all those moments are in the ether now, stranded only in the stories in our minds. Nor should we harbor any bitterness toward others, because over time, our sense of disconnection likely equaled theirs, and in condemning them, we condemn ourselves. Some people didn't see us needing them. Some didn't care. It does not matter now. All that matters is what is here, now, before us, to be lived and defined and experienced as we choose. We can breathe deeply today and notice that there is no scent of yesterday. In this moment, there is nothing but newness, a white space, nothing but an open field of possibility ready to be felt and explored. Let us meet it with an intention and a skill in exploring it lovingly, slowly. The sensory animal. To slow down the moment, we must heighten our senses. To feel something more, we must either take more in or more deeply sense that which is already here. We all have vivid memories of times when a crisis or a beautiful moment seemed to slow down time. We rounded a corner and saw an accident. We sat by the side of someone we loved as they died. We watched proudly in the audience as our children graduated. In these moments, our heightened alertness made the scene unfold in slow motion. With knowledge of this power, we can choose to direct it at will, to slow down our experience of time and of life itself. It is in our nature to sense our environment. We are highly attuned sensory animals. Our gifts of vision, smell, touch, taste, and hearing can be aimed and used like a great receiver to pull in and magnify this moment's streaming current. Slowing time begins always with the breath. The deeper and longer we draw air in, the more oxygenated our bodies become, and the more heightened our energy and presence. Yet most of us are not aware of how we breathe. We are shallow breathers, dumbly sipping from this deep, refreshing pool of oxygen around us. On the rare instances when we use our breath, it comes in huffs and grunts of displeasure or exertion. But life can never be fully felt if we are not breathing in the moment and oxygenating our brains to full power and alertness through deep and present breathing. When we attune to our breath and deepen and lengthen the volume of air that we draw in, it has an immediate and extraordinary impact on how we experience the moment. Before we give a speech or performance, we can breathe. Before a tough conversation with a lover or friend, we can breathe. When we are waiting in line at the store, working out, or sitting at our desks, we can remember to take in life and feel it through every breath. Let us try to bring awareness to our breath now. We should draw air into our bellies as if filling a great balloon, feeling the air all the way up into our chest, then let it out smoothly with controlled ease. It is difficult, if not impossible, to do this type of breathing every moment. Our subconscious will quickly take the helm back and resume shallow breathing. But it can be conditioned to last longer if we focus on it. The practice becomes stronger and over time more automatic. To be more present, let us check into our breath several times in the hour, and especially in moments that we want to feel and remember. We can further slow time by absorbing more details from our surroundings. We should take note of the color, texture, and placement of objects around us. We can notice the way the tree branch sways rhythmically with the wind as we gaze out the window. We can observe the smooth and perfect skin of a baby, touching her soft cheek and mimicking her expressions. We can watch the cloud formations as they make lazy shapes in the sky. We can see how artfully food is arranged on a plate, with the vibrant greens and oranges of each ingredient. This effort is not a race. Scanning our surroundings like beasts on the run is not what we are after. Our aim is to drink in the moment, and so we should pause and truly see what is in front of us. It is the curious and unhurried eye that brings color back to life. Slowing time continues by heightening our awareness of touch, our physical sensation of the moment. We should touch more things around us, pick up things and turn them in our hands and take in their dimensions, texture, and details. Kissing our lover, we should feel their lips as if this were the most important kiss. When we walk, we should walk in presence, feeling how our heels and toes touch the earth. Our skin holds the keys to a life truly felt, to real pleasures of experience. And what do we hear now? Too often we tone down the sounds of life. We should love the sounds in our ears. The car driving by, the house finch trilling in the birch tree, the beautiful, unique voice speaking to us. For us to slow and enjoy life, we must enjoy the music of the world around us. This does not mean we cannot tune out the irritable, but there is a difference between tuning some things out and turning off all things. Finally, no sense in our hasty world is so brutishly ignored as that of taste. Ours is a culture that gulps its food like starving hyenas. We don't even let food linger. We don't delight in its texture and its finish. Many have no memory of their last meal because they barely experienced eating it. We must return to more dignified times, when food was not something we wolfed down on the run, but something with meaning that brought nourishment, joy, and connection into our lives. Let us take real pleasure in what we are eating, and if what we are eating doesn't bring true enjoyment and health to our bodies, then let us push it aside. It is such a simple formula. The more senses we bring to the moment, the more time slows. The more a catalog of joyful, vivid memories grows in our minds, the more life is filled with gratitude, and the more nourished our soul. Awareness can stop time. To those who cannot sense and slow time, we need only remind them of the times it happened almost automatically. Remember when you were immersed in your art and everything narrowed around you? Remember when you slowed time and breathed in the smell of your lover? Remember when you gave that gift and watched his face as he unwrapped it, and how his smile seemed to happen so quickly at the time, yet the moment lingered so long? And now, as it plays back in your mind, how that smile slowly spreads across his face, as if the more days that pass, the longer that smile lingers, even as its brilliance never fades? Remember when the world stopped as you listened closely to your friend sharing her pain, and you just felt for her? Remember when you walked into the meadow or the woods or the sand and looked out on the vista of nature, and it felt as if you were a part of it and it a part of you, that magical immensity and power of nature taking your breath away? Remember that plate of food that you relished every single bite of, wishing the meal would never end and the tastes would never fade? Remember the sounds of the concert you waited so long for, that pulsing in your ears that seemed to beat with your own heart. It was as if we put time itself on hold so that we could sense something that was timeless, beautiful, meaningful. These needn't be rare moments. There can be an everyday magic to our experience, and that magic need not be mystical, but rather a conscious trick of elongating time, of heightening and deepening our senses to the moment. Awareness is humanity's best weapon against time. So let us always remember our capacities to be gifted time benders. We have an extraordinary ability to slow the moment down, to wade into it, to feel it swirl and surround us, along with the powers of will and motivation. The ability to fully sense and heighten our experiences helps us combat staleness and live a truly free and vibrant life. 2 beats longer. What would happen to the quality of our life and relationships if we simply amplified our senses just a little longer? Let us forget for now where we are supposed to be and what we should be doing. Instead, let us hold this moment for just 2 beats longer. Do not breathe so quickly. Take in air for 2 beats longer. Do not scan the room. Sense the room by gazing into each shadow and corner for 2 beats longer. Do not merely glance at her. Look into her eyes and hold them for 2 beats longer. Do not gulp down the next meal, but savor each bite for 2 beats longer. Let the tastes melt and linger. Do not send the heartless note. Read it once more and spend 2 beats longer, sensing the pain it may cause another. Do not give a perfunctory kiss goodbye while juggling everything on the way out the door. Make the kiss count. Make it firm and solid and true, holding the moment passionately for 2 beats longer. Life is lived in the extra beats we hold as time unfolds. Soon, the 2 beats become 4, the 4 become 8, and eventually we will have mastered the art of experiencing life, of feeling who we are and where we are on our path to greatness, of creating real moments, of living as joyous masters in the infinite and divine freedom of now. The 9 declarations. 1. Meet life with full presence and power. 2. Reclaim your agenda. 3. Defeat your demons. 4. Advance with abandon. 5. Practice joy and gratitude. 6. Do not break integrity. 7. Amplify love. 8. Inspire greatness. 9. Slow time.
Meet the author. Brendon Burchard is one of the most widely followed personal development trainers of our time. He is a number one New York Times best-selling author whose books include Life's Golden Ticket, The Millionaire Messenger, and The Charge, Activating the 10 Human Drives That Make You Feel Alive. After surviving a car accident at the age of 19, Brendon received what he calls Life's Golden Ticket, a second chance. Since then, he has dedicated his life to helping others find their charge and share their voice with the world. Brendon's efforts have inspired hundreds of millions of people around the globe. He is one of the top 100 most followed public figures on Facebook. His weekly YouTube show is the most viewed direct-to-camera personal development series in the history of the site. His motivational podcast, The Charged Life, debuted at number one on iTunes across all categories in the United States and multiple countries. And his blog posts rank as many of the most liked and shared in the modern history of the motivational genre. As a popular conference speaker, he has shared the stage with the Dalai Lama, Sir Richard Branson, Katie Couric, Steve Forbes, Arianna Huffington, Wayne Dyer, Tony Robbins, and hundreds of the world's leading thinkers and innovators. Brendon is also the founder of High Performance Academy, the legendary personal development program for achievers, the Experts Academy, the world's most comprehensive marketing training for authors, speakers, life coaches, and online thought leaders. For these works, Larry King named him, quote, one of the top motivation and marketing trainers in the world, unquote. Recognized as a thought leader in human motivation and business marketing, Brendon is the recipient of the Maharishi Award and sits on the Innovation Board at XPRIZE Foundation. Meet Brendon and receive free resources on motivation and high performance at brendonbouchard.com.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.